So, our next speaker is Stefan Metzmacher. He is a Samba team member also with Zernet, and give him a big welcome.
Hello. My name is Stefan Metzmacher. I'm working as developer for Zernet. I'm working on Samba for about 10 years now. So, and today I'm talking about DC-RPC. Why, well, what is it? Where is it used? What have we implemented in Samba? Why do we need a new infrastructure? Some words about testing, some examples. So, what is DC-RPC? It's an infrastructure to do remote procedure calls from one process to another, mostly to a remote server, but it's not required to do that over a real network. It could also be local name pipes or something like that. And the DC-RPC system was designed as a development environment which could be used, and also as a network protocol. And the development interface is the interface definition language together with a compiler for that. And the network protocol defines the transfer syntax, the marshalling of the PDUs, the PDU ordering, and things like that. So where is it used? It was originally designed and with a reference implementation and documentation. This code is available from opengroup.org, and you can find some details on Wikipedia about it. Then with Windows, DC-RPC get adopted more widely. I think in Windows NT 4, or maybe 3.5 or something like that, where it was used to do remote administration of file servers, domain controllers, doing printing remotely, then later for Win replication, Active Directory replication, the replication for the sysvol, the FRS replication, and also as a foundation for the DCOM, the distributed component object model, where you can do remote object method calls on remote objects. As Samba wants to implement mostly the same things as Windows, we had to implement that in Samba. And Samba 3 had a very ugly handwritten code, which does all the marshalling by hand, all the structure definitions by hand, and try to figure out how to answer RPC requests Windows clients were sending. And we only implemented the things which were strictly required by Windows clients. So it was really painful to add new calls, and it wasn't a nice experience. Then after 3.0, the development for 4.0 began. There we had a completely new infrastructure for RPC, which allowed asynchronous client libraries, asynchronous execution in the server, and it was much more clean in the implementation and also a bit easier to understand and to follow. The big advantage was the invention of our own Perl-based IDL compiler named PIDL. With that, we were able to define the interface definitions in IDF files and then run it through the Piddle compiler and get all the marshalling code, client-server stubs, and everything for free. And I think there are a few, a half million lines generated, or maybe more currently. So whenever we had a bug somewhere, we just need to fix it in the IDL compiler and get it fixed everywhere. The main disadvantage is that the RPC server was single-threaded. It's just one process loading service modules, and everything, all services are just in one process. And if any remote procedure call is blocking, the whole server is blocked. Then with SAMBA 3.2, the Piddle stuff get merged back to the 3.x release stream. Then we generated functions for the old SAMBA 3 client libraries. With 3.4, we were able to move processes which were handling RPC traffic into external processes, mainly forked from our top-level SMBD process, but not in the SMBD which is responsible for the SMB connection anymore. Then with 3.6, we merged the client stubs for the 4.0 development code and for the production code. I introduced the CRPC binding handle abstraction, which currently has a few backends, the source 3 client library, the source 4 client library, our internal RPC messaging, the communication between the WinBind parent and client, the WBint infrastructure. But every, or it's the client stubs are available for all of these and are all the same functions now. With 4.0, or even before, it was possible for the Open Change project to load their services into the single-threaded RPC server we had in SAMBA 4. It works quite nice for them, but still the limitation is there. If there's one thing blocking, everything is blocked. So, why do we need a new implementation then? Obviously, because we don't want to do this single-threaded thing. And also, more and more protocols require true async processing, like the witness protocol used for file services. There's a new printing protocol using RPC asynchronously. The SysFor replication protocol uses it asynchronously, and I guess a lot more in future. So in general, in SAMBA we have a T-event rec infrastructure and do async processing very, very similar in all cases. So the idea was to do it the same way in our RPC server. So then there is a feature named association groups. This is very similar to SMB3 multi-channel, so a client can connect to a server, gets back an association group ID, and it can try a second connection providing this association group ID, and then these two channels are bound together and context handles could be shared between the connections. This is something we had implemented in the 4.0 code base, and partly it's also in the old SAMR3 code base, but it doesn't work across protocols, so it doesn't work on TCP, just over SMB. So, and we want an infrastructure which handles this completely right and scalable through multiple processes. Then, yeah, one important thing to have a new infrastructure is a thing called DCRPC pipe. This has nothing to do with the name pipes, which are the transport of RPC over SMB. It's some kind of Unix pipe where you pipe bytes from one process to another, and you can pass this abstract pipe as arguments to functions, and yeah, then the pipe gets elements of fixed size. The only one I'm currently was seeing is a byte pipe where just bytes are shuffled around, but it's also possible to define simple structures and pass arrays of these structures around. And the sending side just terminates it with a zero length chunk, and then it processes with the next pipe, or it's switching from the input pipes to the output pipes or to the output fixed parameters. Yeah, this is used for the SysWire replication, the FRS2 protocol, where files are replicated between file servers, and typically the client opens a handle and then just reads through this pipe the complete data of the file asynchronously and non-blocking. There's a concept of DCERPC callbacks. I guess for us it's optional now, because I haven't found any Windows documentation where this is used, but the technical reference documentation mentions it. So in theory it would be possible that someone tries to use this feature, but luckily no one does yet.
Matt,
yes?
Is there also a concept of an asynchronous RPC at all in the
yes,
RPC?
Yes, yes.
Can we implement asynchronous RPCs?
Yes, we don't do it completely in a good fashion from the coding style perspective, but we are doing it. So, yeah, we also worked a bit on security features. We have a GSS API abstraction called GenSec, and all RPC authentication uses this abstraction now, which simplifies a lot, and we can implement the backends and support features like header signing, which is core DCRPC system, which Windows uses, has a concept of sign and sealing, so you can encrypt and sign traffic, but typically only the payload is encrypted and signed. And in order to prevent some attacks, it's desirable to also sign the header, so that the operation number or something like that can't be forged. We implemented that, and it will be in 4.2, and it's also backported to the old infrastructure in order to make us more secure. This header signing is negotiated at the first negotiation, the DCRPC bind, and following the bind, every RPC request gets this verification trailer. This is optional, but Windows is sending it, and we are doing so now too. It basically holds a copy of the negotiated features, a copy of the header, which is good. If you don't support header signing, you get a protected header too with this method, and you also prevent downgrade attacks. Then there is a bind time feature negotiation. There the client and server could negotiate context, security context multiplexing. This is something like the multiple session setups in SMB. So basically the client can reuse a connection from multiple security principles and dispatch functions on this. The keep connection often supported is a minor thing. I'm not completely understand it yet, but we will implement that. So the goals for Samba are that we have just one implementation. Currently we have four all incomplete implementations, so two server implementations and two client implementations. And what we want is just one implementation of the low-level PDU processing that can be client and server, so that we could possibly implement the callback thing in future. Then we have goals which are useful for others. For example, the OpenChange project typically gets broken when we change something in Samba on the API. So the design goal is that we have something that could be provided as stable ABI, so we don't break them every few months. And in order to do this, I had to change a lot of code to make our DCRPC binding structure private. The binding is something like a description of where you want to connect, so the protocol type, TCP/IP, or name pipes, the server name, the authentication you want to use, and things like that. And we now have this as private abstract structure we can pass to functions, and we can internally change this and without breaking external users. Then I implemented something, or I started to implement a protocol testing. So basically with our Python bindings, we are able to marshal arbitrary RPC requests into blobs instead of just passing them to a socket or something like that. So here we can construct PDUs, modify them so that they are invalid or something like that, and then pass this blob directly to a TCP socket to a server and see what it will give back. And this kind of test is typically not possible with a full-featured client library. So now that we want to completely rewrite the server code and the client code, I want to make sure that everything is well tested and prevent, hopefully prevent security problems there. Then the good thing when changing all the infrastructure, the beyond or below the application level. The good thing is that we have hundreds of SMB torture tests which are run with each commit to our repository. And it's a good test that we don't break anything. So now some examples of how the generated code and the new infrastructure will look like. For example, we have the witness async notify function, which is used for the witness protocol, where client can register a callback or an event handler that will get notified when the address of a cluster node changes or something like that. So typically this works like the client opens this context handles and register it, and then it sends the async notify, which will block for hours or something like that. And the recent SMB3.02 release of Windows changed it a bit so that it gets back after a timeout, but the old version could possibly hang forever if the node is healthy. This generates a structure with the input values, the output values, and the result. Then we have our client stubs. We have two kinds. The first is the one with the underscore R underscore at the end. These are the functions which were used in the development cycle of Samba 4.0, that we always use this structure-based functions. Yeah, we have the asynchronous send function. The caller gets back tventrack handle, can register a callback function there, and when it gets called via the callback function, it should call the receive function to get the actual result, or it can run the synchronous wrapper of it, but for this example, it's not that useful. Then we have the functions where we pass explicitly the arguments. Yeah, this is more or less similar to the bindings which are generated on Windows. The input and output parameters are just passed as arguments, the outputs as reference arguments. Yes, so for the server, this will in future look like this. We will have a send function, which will get a DCRPC call handle. This just represents this single request, and it will hold references to a security context, maybe a context handles, and all kinds of things, and also references to the main server context and other things that were mentioned on the next slide. So this example will typically just get the request. The tevent-rec defer callback is just there that we can answer multiple requests on the next slide, but can be ignored for now. So this will just add this request to a list of requests on the service context and just return a request structure. Through the whole call of this function, the state will be maintained. So basically, where you see the to-do here, there needs to be tvent-rec create, which just allocates the state. And the rec, tvent rec structure, and this will be maintained until the receive function will be called. So typically this will just return and sit there, and then, for example, the witness daemon notices that an IP address has changed or something like that, then it goes in a loop through the pending requests and notifies them with tvent rec done. And there it's important that we call this tvent rec defer callback before, because after this, typically you need to just return after calling tvent rec done, because all your state on the stack and things like that can be changed. And in order to avoid that, we defer the callback, and then we can loop and notify all requests. Then the top level code will just call the receive function and then delivers the result to the client. So in order to abstract this in the core server infrastructure, we will have a function pair for each normally RPC function. So we have always a send function and a receive function. This is together glued into a structure. And then we have a dispatch entry point vector, which holds a reference to the interface definition table for this interface, and then a pointer or a reference to the entry points. So there are a few structures or objects which will be introduced there too. First, there's a DCRPC server context. This will be the first thing an implementation will create. This is currently just a global structure, but in future it should be possible to implement multiple server instances, and this server context is just one instance then. There we register our supported authentication types. This will also get a structure then, and the context will hold a list of authentication types then, together with their principal names and references to the credentials. Then the application will need to register endpoints. So for example, it will say, please listen on any TCP port or on a specific TCP port, listen on this name pipe, listen on a local Unix domain socket or something like that. This will be also registered on the context, and then there will be a concept of a server manager. This is more or less the global state for one service. For example, the witness service would then implement this manager structure and register the interface and the entry point vector. So if the request comes in, the main logic can look up the interface, find the manager, and then pass a request to the entry point vector functions. And I'm not sure if we will do it in the first one, but we may later also introduce a server object. So each remote procedure call can have an optional object UUID attached. And if this is used, function calls can be dispatched between multiple managers. So for example, with this DCOM, each object in the object-oriented scenario will get one object, and function calls can be associated with the objects. Then one more example, or one example regarding this DCRPC pipes. So here you see the definition, just the type def, the flag can be ignored for now, just the name a pipe, then the type, it's just uint8, which is just a byte, and then a name we want to use later. This will generate code like this. Each of this pipe will get an underscore chunk structure. This is just the account and the array to a number of bytes in this case here. So then there's a function to create such a pipe. This is a private structure. Then there is a function to push some chunks into the pipe asynchronously with the send and receive pair, and also to get some chunks out of the pipe. So then there is the raw get file data async function, which makes use of this. It just gets a server context. This is just like a file handle. And as output, it gets a pipe, and through the pipe, it gets the whole content of the file. This will just look like this. We will just pass this byte pipe as argument, and the low-level code will handle it in a special way because the IDL compiler knows about it and calls some different functions there. Then the service, which implements the pull replication of the file handle replication, will look similar to this. It will just create the pipe, then call the asynchronous function call, passing the byte pipe as argument. And then, as a second step, it needs to start the pull on the pipe. And once the server returns the first chunks, the callback function, the download loop chunk done call will be triggered. And this will just call the receive function, take a look at the chunk. If the count is zero, it's the termination and we are done. Otherwise, it will trigger the next pull request and loop until the whole file is transferred. Then I would like to thank a few persons who helped me with this project. First, Gregor Beck from Cernet. He changed some low-level RPC client code in Samba 4 with me together. Andreas Schneider and Günther Deschner, they both did a good job in preparing things for me, clean up APIs and things like that. David discussed the server design with me a bit, and maybe others, which also helped a lot. Yeah, and now I'm basically done. Any questions? Yeah, Alexander?
What is the overhead compared to the previous?
You mean for the byte pipe or
yeah, what? For calling and
I didn't make any performance test with it yet, so I don't know.
Okay.
Any more questions?
What is the status when it's available? In which version is it inside? Next year, 2 years, 3 years?
I hope in 4.3, but I don't know exactly.
So and runs it better than the old one? Faster?
At least not slower, I guess. So, but the most important thing is the internal cleanup and that we can implement things like the asynchronous functions easily without trying to work around our limitations.
It does a user makes happy. Everybody's happy around to using it.
At least.
Yes, sure. Yeah. Needs it. Something
working.
I think the key point will be more assurance to developers on the code that they write.
So the key point would be that the developers will get more sure in what they write and more trackable memory management, more trackable where the resources are going. And I just was worrying about the amount of structures inside structures that we will get.
I don't think it's much more than we have currently.
Yeah, and having some performance test at the low level, like you said, with the raw sockets, might be a good idea to start early.
Yeah, and the good thing is then that we are able to implement things like the witness protocol and the file replication for the syswall and things like that, which are currently not available. Yes, Matthias?
Did you implement it for the witness protocol only, or is it also implemented for MMC or any other RPC already?
That's just the example I took here. It's not specific for that. So
MMC requests, for example, are async as well already?
No. So the transformation will look like this, that we first change the core infrastructure and then still provide glue code which just calls the account implementations. And then, as required, we could change to the asynchronous one.
Okay, I see.
Just to extend an earlier question, when asked about availability, you said release 4.3. Could you put a timestamp on that?
No.
Thank you for the answer. Any more questions? You can ask him all the time.
I mean, well, there we have some kind of release planning. So the idea is that 4.3 will be out sometime next year, summer next year,
roughly. No.
Or earlier next year, maybe even. Depends on how well we can keep up with a 9-month schedule.
You mean 4.3, right?
4.3, yes.
Okay, yeah.
4.2 is due in the next couple of months. I don't have the precise date around now, but next year will be 4.3. So, yeah. Of course, it would be great if many people would help and speed that up, because it's a prerequisite for many things that are very important on our roadmap.
So do you have a sort of a migration strategy or plan for the existing RPC servers is there easy way to migrate them to async?
It should be. You can do it function by function. So what we will do is first just generate the glue code completely, then check it in, and then you can do a replacement function by function and use a new infrastructure directly.
Hello, yes, you mentioned you took the witness protocol as an example. So does it mean this just contains the RPC calls, or have you also thought about the backend, how to detect server state and what actually to notify to the client? That means how far are we away from a complete witness implementation?
Yes, as you well know, we thought about it. And but this is not directly tied to this here. So we thought about it, but this is a different thing. So the witness server would just talk to CTDB, and there we may need to have the concept of fixed addresses per node, and then just register some callbacks where the event scripts of CTDB can just pass information through the stack and just pass it to the client, and it will try to migrate to a different node then.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Then, congratulations for being so much on time.
Sure.
Thank you very much.